Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hey everybody, on this episode of the Timeless After Show, we're breaking down season 1, episode 14, The Lost Generation. Do you think it's cool hanging out with Ernest Hemingway? Sure. Do you think it's cool escorting him outside to puke? Maybe not so much. Check it out.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Ooh, there you go. Let's get our best flapperness going here. There we go. Welcome, everybody.
Flapperness.
Flapperness. Sure.
Like flappers. Dancers.
Yeah.
Dancers.
There you go.
Apparently, you do need the history lesson.
That's right. Welcome, everybody, to the Timeless After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. We are here, the full panel reunited. Again, at last. To break down the remaining two episodes of this season, three episodes, including tonight, of Timeless. I'm one of your hosts, Frank Brand. You can follow me on Twitter at @AppyGoJackie.
I'm Alexis Torres. You can find me all over social media at ATORES890. That's ATORES890.
Oh, what's up, guys? My name is Carrie Lane. You can find me online at Carrie D Lane. That's KARIDLANE.
And I'm hot for teacher. She dressed as a teacher tonight to teach the history lesson.
You could go that way, too.
I'm Chris Howard. Reach me at Chris Howard Live on Twitter and Instagram.
That's right. In just mere moments, Carrie Lane will get off the seat, over to the dry erase board, and start instructing us right there, just writing down the lesson plan.
I should have done my glasses, too, you know.
I wore them for you.
Yeah.
As always, folks, you can like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. And why don't you hop in the chat? You're watching the show. You get a chance to interact with us as well. Carrie and Alexis have the chat up and running. So share your thoughts about the series in general or this episode in particular. And this, guys, it's all about Paris in the 1920s.
Oh, my gosh. So
pretty cool.
That sounds fun, doesn't it?
Yes.
We'll do that.
I would love to do that.
Food, drinking, dancing, and all kinds of other fun activities.
Yeah.
That's right. But it doesn't all start off all fun and games here for us. We do pick up where we left off at last episode, where Lucy goes to visit her father.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mr. Benjamin Cahill.
Yes.
And find out all about the, we get teased about what life in Rittenhouse is like. We know very least that when you first find out about it, nobody's really excited about the plan. I just wish we would have known more what the plan was during that conversation with your father.
Wouldn't you think that Lucy would say, okay, tell me everything about Rittenhouse so I can know what it's all about?
Yes. But have a moment to be like, please, just tell me more. I don't care what you have to say, but I really want to know.
Yeah. Especially because you're on an objective to stop them, so this is great intel information.
Yeah, meeting, I think she was too shocked, at that point in time. Like, I know that sounds terrible, but that's what I'm going to go with to give her the benefit of the doubt of the fact of, like, she was sitting there going, I don't know what to do right now, so I'm just really mad at you, and
I'm a little let down on Lucy, because I would think, like, well, you think about what Rufus and Wyatt say about this. Oh, wait, maybe I should get more information that I could actually tell them something.
Well, yeah. Wyatt would shoot him. Oh, I thought you meant what would they do?
Oh, yes, this is more a rhetorical question inside her head.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at least he's honest enough to say that when he found out about it, he didn't really believe it. But
I did like that. That made him a little bit more human.
Yeah.
That he was like, I was not a fan of it, but blood is blood, so you just kind of have to go through it.
And his father.
Yeah, which is, at least for me, because I completely understand where he's coming from, even though I don't agree with their stances on things or their cause, but I understand because I have a family that that wanted to be, in a certain field for everybody, and I was the only one who was like, nope, I'm breaking out of that. And then there was a lot of tension and all that kind of stuff, so I totally understand where Lucy and Lindenberg were coming from.
We shook up the entire pornography industry.
There you go.
I'm joking. It was a joke.
Okay.
What I do like is, because a lot about the show is all about, can we change time? But I feel like the nice thing about this episode is you find out, like, there's just, like, the inevitability, the fate of time. And a few characters are talking about that. So you may try your best to change it.
Yeah.
But it's not going to always go the way that you want.
Pretty sure I've said that of, like, I'm all, is this going to be, like, Time Machine? Of, like, he's going to try to do it, and doesn't matter. She's going to die anyways.
Yeah.
We still
but
don't
there's
know.
Hope. They spun it differently this time, which I liked, because they're like, no, not necessarily she's dead. You just got to do something else first, and then you can somehow
see. I still think Rittenhouse has something to do with her death, because, and what I also think is interesting is the fact that Lucy's mother is coming more into the scene and talking more about her knowledge of history and stuff. And you got to wonder if, once again, the guy that married Lucy's mother, her father, what's his name? Benjamin Cahill. Mm-hmm. If he married her because she, too, was a historian.
You know, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, and we did learn from last episode where they say how hard it is for Rittenhouse to try to change that because you know, time is going to fight you every step of the way. And you see this episode where our team does what they think is a good blow to Rittenhouse, changing something. Mm-hmm. And find out, nope, we get back to the present and stand up, nope, it didn't change at all.
Nope.
Everything happened the way it did. So it time's a tricky one.
It's fickle.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a fickle mistress. Fickle. That's right. Yes. and then we do find out, I know some people on the panel were curious about what would happen to Wyatt at the end of the last episode. Will we ever see him again?
We did, actually. The entire episode.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He was there, front and center there, but stuck in a black site underneath the national park.
Interesting.
I like how he's like, left turn, right turn, yes. And roundabout. I know where we are. He's just that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Agent Christopher, not too thrilled with Wyatt. But Wyatt is willing to at least accept his responsibility. Like, I did this, you know, I deserve to pay for what I've done.
Mm-hmm. Which I like. I feel like Wyatt has grown up a lot in this episode. Mm-hmm. From the fact of seeing him kind of, that's not a good term, whine, but the fact that he was a one-note character in a way of the fact that he had a mission, which was to help, you know, get his wife back in some way, shape, and form.
Right.
But I like that he has gotten to the point where he understands that he still wants to do that, but there is also still a bigger picture with that added into that.
So, all three of them have that. They have depth to their character.
Yeah, I feel like at this point, now that we're two episodes left of the season, I think that they have grown exponentially because we were always talking about how Rufus was the biggest
character. He's made the biggest arc.
Yeah, but I feel like we were so focused on Rufus that there was a semi-arc happening that we were like, oh, okay, we're seeing it now, which was great. So,
and I liked is some very nice human moments, realistic moments, where when Rufus finds out that Lucy's father is the man that's been threatening him and his family,
he freaks out at Lucy.
Yeah. But then he calms it.
Which realistically you'd
go off on the person you finding this out from, but then dialing back and realize, all right, yeah, she's just finding this out too. All right,
and it's not like she's working with her biological father either, and it's. She just kind of met him now, too. So it's not even like they know each other.
Yeah. And I just like that, like you said, it was very human of them because they all kind of were at high, high tensity, and then they kind of slowly brought it down.
Well, it's like the initial reaction, and then he goes, oh, wait, I'm sorry, I'm being totally a jerk right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah, well, you know what's interesting is in the beginning...
But that's why they're friends. Yeah, they can talk about it.
Yeah, they can do that.
We were looking at all the trust issues they were having in the early days, and those have been fixed.
Yep.
Everything's good, and they're bonding.
Yep.
They're performing.
Another two people that are bonding, though, are good old Emma and Flynn, hanging out in 1927, along with the proverbial, their henchmen of the week. They're 1927, and, you know, what do you bring when you go back to Paris in 1927? You bring a rocket launcher. Why not?
Sure.
Yes.
Yep. How are you going to shoot down a plane? Yeah.
is it henchman of the week? Are they changing that guy?
No. This guy's been like the number one henchman the entire time, but we have had different henchmen with that henchman every week.
I don't think they're very distinct henchmen because I haven't really noticed.
He's the only one because I know that he's always the one that smokes during every scene.
And that was a crucial. You need a smoker for this one.
Yeah, because the
cigarette that they're like, this is a specific one. Okay.
So, because if you go back and watch from the beginning to now, he's always smoking.
He's just not a really specific looking character that I'm like, he's
also always in the background, too. Like, it's like he's just kind of like drifting back and
forth.
Does he
speak? Did he have any lines?
I feel like he's not a non-talking henchman, I think.
Wait, he talked this one.
Did he?
The blonde guy?
No.
He pulled the gun out. Yeah, he didn't speak.
I don't think he did. I think he just stood there.
Yeah.
Tell us in the chat if he did, because I feel
he's
like I missed that.
He's paid high less. Level background.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. He's just one of those henchmen that just doesn't say words.
Okay.
I love, though, Emma, though. I really like her as a character. Certainly, I know whatever her end game is, but just these little moments that we get, like this part of the episode where it starts off the scene with them talking about meeting Napoleon. And like, he wasn't short, but he surrounded himself by really tall people. So, comparatively, he seems shorter than he normally would appear. So I thought just those little moments where Emma's like, oh, of course I met him. What do you think? That she seems like the fun part.
This is my first trip?
Yeah. The fun part of history, meeting these historical people you've always read about. That would be a cool
thing. That actually kind of makes sense, though, if you're not, like, it's not like he was short. If you're 5'7", you're hanging out with, like, 6'5 people, of course you'll seem short.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anybody over 6 to your 5'7 would seem Pretty short. Yeah.
And it's just like anybody that goes on a road trip, except if you're going through time. But like you go to Paris, you just like, you know, I want to go to the Dingle Bar because I want to see Picasso. Like, yeah. You know, I'm here. I mean, I'm not going to waste this time just hanging out in a catacomb.
The henchmen don't really care about history, but she's like, dude, how often do you get these chances?
Yeah. Yeah, use it. For real.
Yeah.
I said, no, I'm just a henchman.
No, she's been interesting. I mean, as much as I love Matthew Orr, you know, and I feel like I was sad to see him go from the show last week. Just because he's such an awesome actor. And I feel like we never really got to see much of Anthony in the series at all. I mean, he had little moments that were profound, but just like, oh, man, but I like him as much. I wish he had been written off.
It was a good part, though. I mean, he played a good role throughout the
written off by Rittenhouse.
There it is. But we do find out that Flynn's plan, though, is to shoot Lindbergh about a mile away before he actually lands, crash the Spirit of St. Louis there, and hopefully he won't be injured. He just gets the arm a little dislocated, but otherwise, the idea is to try to stop him, maybe eliminate him from history. At least that's Flynn's plan, another member of Rittenhouse.
It was interesting, though, that Flynn didn't really... Was his real plan to get Lindbergh, or was it to go after the other guy? Because he appeared to abandon the plan pretty easily in the episode, didn't he?
I'm interested because, like, Flynn seems to play a really long game in the sense where you take Lindbergh, you could just kill him right there if you go by Lucy's journal and think that he's a member of Rittenhouse, or you know that the team is always pursuing you when you go to these different locations. You get Lucy in a room with Lindbergh, have her talk to him, and find out more information from Lindbergh about...
Who he's connected with.
Yes.
Because we didn't see what happened once Flynn went over to that house, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think he's playing, like, the long con is the in my head where it's just like he just has plans, he's just kind of playing it very slowly at this point in time.
He's a crafty one, that Flynn. Look at that. But then we also find out, though, that they don't have Wyatt anymore to rely on, so who are they going to be heading back with? We've already met him once before, but David Baumgartner. Yeah, Bam Bam. It's good to see him come back again. Nod to continuity. It's okay.
What is that?
Okay. I'm just sad that
he just came and went.
I wasn't ready for it. It sucked.
Well, they can't keep him around.
No, I know, because we need Wyatt back. I just was hoping that maybe he'd get injured or something, not die.
It was
weird
that he died so quickly.
It was very fast.
Steps out of the spaceship, boom.
No modern guns. He followed the rules. You're just like...
But I hated it because I was like, I hope that doesn't kill him in the end.
But we at least give it up for him that he was the first person to go and take a trip in the lifeboat and not get nauseous. So
Yeah.
Look at him.
He's like, nothing, not even like Disneyland teacups. That was a cute reference.
I like that.
Jinx. It was cool to see him, though. It was nice they set it up early in the season as a possible replacement, so it was nice to see him come back.
Yeah.
Sad.
But they go back to the crash scene, and David, you're proving his worth, realizing, like, oh, yeah, probably shot down by a rocket launcher, probably over here. Really quickly finds it out.
Yeah. Some very good detective work there.
Yeah. But then they also find a cigarette butt from your boy.
I'm telling you, man.
Cigarette Henchy.
All he does. If you go back, it's just him smoking a cigarette in every single plan.
And then we get to meet our good boy, Ernest Hemingway.
Oh, that was cool.
That was cool.
Yes.
I just liked how he came into that conversation because I noticed that background person standing behind them. I'm like, wow, that person's really listening to their conversation. And then lo and behold, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm like, I want to get the scoop in the story. And so you're just like, oh, okay, that was a nice, like, lead in of a realistic, like, if you are this close to someone, you're like, oh, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, especially because they're not really whispering. They're actually talking at the level that we are talking at right now.
If they're in France, I guess they're assuming that people aren't speaking English as much.
True.
Because Lucy speaks to the locals in French, too, so.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how many, like, that all those people were in France at that time. That Hemingway was there in France. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they mentioned absinthe and drinking the absinthe, and that was Hemingway's thing, wasn't it?
Well, it was also, I think it was also big in that time, wasn't it?
And Fitzgerald was there, too.
Yeah.
And Picasso.
Yeah. They
have you ever had absinthe?
I have.
I've had it. Did you have it with the real wormwood in it?
No.
No.
I think it was something a little bit more watered down. But, but yeah, it's... I think in history books, I believe that Fitzgerald and them usually hung out together. That's why they're called the Lost Generation, because they're usually hanging out together. So it made sense for them to be going from speakeasy to speakeasy hanging out.
And they were just drinking and...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people...
Hanging out, doing art.
Yeah, if you know Hemingway, that's pretty much all he did was write and drink. So, and other things. So, yeah.
Oh, did he smoke stuff and stuff?
Sure.
You saw the episode. Chris, you saw what he was talking about, what you're supposed to be doing.
Oh, yeah, I forget what he said. Screwing for those who can't.
Yes, there you go. But also, you know, makes sense as a reporter for the Toronto Star. Mm-hmm. You got to keep your ear open because you never know what somebody might be saying. That could be a good lead for a story. Mm-hmm. And you got to have great taste buds, too, so you can lick a cigarette and figure out what kind of tobacco's used.
No. I know, that was insane. I was like, how do you know? But I get, I'm assuming
well,
you
he
smoke
said
a
that's
lot.
What he smokes, so he knows that taste.
Yeah. So that makes sense. But I wonder if it was something he didn't smoke, what would he have done? He's like, well, I don't know what this is.
It was cool for those General Hospital fans. Both Alexis and I work on the after show for that.
Oh, hey, look at that.
Yeah, Johnny Sicara. He played Johnny Sicara on General Hospital, Brandon Barrick. Mm-hmm. So it was very cool to have him on over here. So
Was he the one who played Hemingway?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
It was nice to see
him
again.
Yeah, I liked him. He was a charming kind of actor personality going on.
I'm liking that we get to see a lot of Hemingway and a lot of more modern, not modern stuff, but he's been coming back, like the Woody Allen film.
You could call that modern history.
Woody Allen film, Night in Paris.
Night in Paris.
Mm-hmm. So stuff like that. Like, I think there was another thing that they had him in as well, and I think another time travel TV show besides this one. But like, I like that he's coming back a lot, since a lot of people are like, I know the name, but I don't know what he does. And I'm like, oh, he's done a lot, actually, so you should go look it up.
Yeah, also, I think people, the more default is thinking of him as kind of like the Big Papa Hemingway with the big white beard and all that sort of thing, more of that kind of role.
Yeah, when he's older. Yeah. But
didn't he commit suicide in the end?
I'm not sure, to be honest, how he died.
I thought I read something recently that said something like that. But.
Yeah, look it up, guys. Know. History, do it.
The chat mentions it, and then on Twitter, Timeless did a great job of tweeting at someone mentioning how Lucy goes, you were just an ambulance driver, you weren't really in the war. Mm-hmm. And then someone on Twitter asked, was that true? And Timeless said yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely loving how accurate the show tries to be of... as much as we can with the historical fiction.
Yeah.
But it feels like each character identity is accurate. Yeah. And then maybe what happens is a little...
Well, yeah, I feel like they take actual... whatever Lucy says is usually a historical fact, and then we just kind of tweak it as the episode progresses. Yes. But everything that came out of her mouth is correct. Yeah. All facts.
You know what's changed, though, is remember in the early days where they weren't showing the actual faces that much of the old famous people?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about that. Now they're showing them.
Well, wasn't that modern, though, too?
Yeah, the closer they get to modern day, the less likely they're going to show
faces. Okay. Yeah, because we're supposed to relate to them a little bit more. And just like we said with Hemingway, we mostly know him with the big beard and he's much older. This one, we're like, oh, he's younger. He just looks like, you know, someone from the 20s, which is this charming cat.
So we don't have it etched in our mind what the person looks like already.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there is physical evidence, but you can tweak with it a little bit more than you can with seeing George W. Bush. Or
like the last 30 to 40 years, you'd be like, but like once you start getting like 60 up to 100, you're like,
maybe we can just... We can
it's a show.
I remember them being blonde and tall. Perfect. Yeah. Throw them in there. Yeah. You know, it's fine. So.
Now, good old Ernest, he knows somebody that can help him identify who is the attack. And this is, Alexis was giddy at this moment. Takes him to the club, and who's singing there but none other than Josephine Baker.
Yeah, you're freaking out.
Well, because the fact that they said it in the show that she wasn't just an entertainer, she was kind of like the spider in the web of gossip. Like, that's kind of what entertainment was in speakeasies at that time, was the fact that a lot of entertainment, the stars would actually learn a lot from people. I'm supposed to be drunk people because they're usually just spouting off information. And eventually she became a spy, and it was like it was a whole thing. And the fact that she was one of the first dancers, African American dancers, that was, you know, televised at one point, like, it was huge. And the fact that she was also very at the time scantily clad, but it didn't matter. It was just like, oh my god, there's a woman who's showing her midriff and her shoulders. Like, it was just, it's cool. And it was jazz, and it was a whole thing, and it was just really cool to see her coming back. I know I think there was another artist, her name is Carrie Hilson or something. She's a pop artist or R&B artist who did African-American women through time, and she did a dance, like the banana dance from her. So, like, I like that she's getting back out there. But Josephine Baker is huge, and if you don't know anything about her, you should look her up.
And I do like how the writers set in one line kind of give modern-day audiences a context for her, just saying when she's the Beyonce of 1927.
Yeah, that was perfect. Okay. Yeah.
And she was a spy.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
Chat room informed us that, thank you, Justin Hemingway, committed suicide in 1961.
There you go.
Oh, wow.
See? Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know that. But
he shot himself.
But yeah, I love the Josephine Baker bit too. It was so fun.
It was just cool to see
and
that.
The actress just really had that like charismatic and like comfortable and confident that was just like, I just want
to
watch.
Yeah, there's a lot of accounts that said that anytime you talk to her, you kind of just forgot about your surroundings. You kind of just she was just there to listen to you, and mm-hmm. she gave really good advice, and she was very helpful, and that was the whole point. I mean, I don't know much about her entire upbringing, because there's not a lot of accounts, and a lot of people say a lot of different stories about her, but I know there's, like, some sound facts, which we got enough of in this episode that you didn't really need to go any deeper unless you wanted to, you know? Mm-hmm. So...
One other thing that starts happening in this episode, too, is that Agent Christopher finds herself boxed out of Mason Industries because the NSA is now taking over. Agent Jake Neville is now in charge of the operation.
Which is so hard because, like, I like that actor, and I'm like, oh, Jim I want to like best. You. But you're, like, playing this character that I don't know if we're supposed to like you yet.
Well, Jim Beaver's really good at playing, like, this weird role of, like, wait, are you a good guy or are you a bad guy? Yes. So it was really cool.
Well, and you both recognize him together. So did you do another show that he was...
No, I didn't do the show, but I watched the show he was on. Oh. Supernatural. Yeah.
Supernatural is one of my favorite shows.
And he's in,
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, and I don't remember the name of it. If you know it, put it in the chat. But yeah, Supernatural's huge, and I love that he plays his character named Bobby.
Bobby on Supernatural.
Yeah, so it was really cool to see him, and obviously we're going to see another...
Crimson Peak.
Oh, yeah, that's right!
He was on Crimson Peak.
So yeah, so this actor has made his rounds, but he's mostly been well-known, at least in this generation, as playing Bobby, who's a hunter, who hunts the Supernatural. And so it's just really cool to see him, because he's usually like this, like... not hick, but like he's
kind
more
flannel wearing,
yeah, kind of guy. And then this one, he's wearing a suit, and he's very, you know. And I know he's played other roles like that, but it's just weird to see that transition into that. At least for me, so it was really good to see him. And then we'll see more Supernatural stuff. It's just Eric Kripke knows who he brings from his other
projects.
There's
another actor coming up.
Yeah. This is a big deal though, with Rittenhouse actually taking over. Because it is, I would say it's the NSA.
Oh, yeah, well, that they're all Rittenhouse agents.
But I called it. I knew Mason was going to bring in something about Rittenhouse eventually. I don't think he's going to take over, but at this point now, but like,
it's kinda like one
he
of the
brought
same.
Them in. Yeah.
He kind of is Rittenhouse at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and certainly after his and Agent Christopher standoff last episode, where she's like, hey, you know, nope, you don't need to know anything.
And you wonder if it's him if that conversation triggered it.
Well, as we find out from her talking to White later in the episode, that this is probably, hostile is not to be takeover, but this is something that's been in the plan for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it's just like a nice little coup that they're doing.
Yeah. Probably just been waiting for it. And
I don't think
we've
seen the last of her, though.
Agent Christopher?
Yeah.
No, we saw her at the end. So she's with the team. Whether how long she stays with the team, I guess we'll
yeah.
up for speculation.
See what happens.
I don't know. But we also get to see Rufus flirting with Josephine Baker. And I do like several times during this episode. Please don't tell Gia that I said this.
I liked Lucy's response. It was the best.
She's like,
Yeah.
But you know what? Flirting with a historical figure, who cares? Yeah. It's not like you're going to do anything.
And that's also kind of Josephine Baker's thing. Like, not to say that she's like a floozy or anything, but that was how she got information sometimes. Was just
everybody likes to be flirted with. Everybody, it's because you're being nice and complimenting people, essentially.
Yeah, and that's and I feel bad because flirting is a way of complimenting. It's not supposed to be like, oh, I want to sleep with you. It's like, no, it's just there's an attraction there and you're just kind of acting on it and then you just move on from there.
I think I always say it with like, 400 years ago. Come on, get over it.
No, wait, what?
It was like 400 years ago. Get over it.
Oh, I mean, Gia doesn't need to know. I mean, if Gia's already getting upset at the fact that he's not even giving her information, can you imagine? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was flirting with Josephine Baker. What? No.
Yeah.
And talking about screwing people with Hemingway. Like, it just sounds bad. I think we can just put that in the back burner for
And then, just in the chat, how could Rufus not want to flirt with her, right?
Yes. Oh, my God, Josephine freaking Baker.
Actually, even when Josephine was talking to
Lucy,
Lucy was like, I
was
like
so
you.
Jelly.
I was like,
jelly. I was like, love me, Josephine Baker. Notice me, senpai.
Yeah.
That was a good conversation, because Lucy, in her way,
that was
explaining
very nice,
what she's talking about. But being a teacher, always having the facts, is something that she felt was concrete, and now she feels like she's standing in quicksand with everything that's been happening in her life recently.
Mm-hmm. It was like she was having a whole different conversation than what they were supposed to be talking about.
But defining what the Lost Generation is.
Yeah. And it was nice to look and see how Lucy's feeling right now.
Yeah.
Like, give a little insight. Yeah. I mean, we know, but it was like... And it's also that idea, like, you could almost talk to a complete stranger about anything, especially if you're not going to see them again later.
Never.
So you're like, I'm going to tell you all my personal details and how I really feel... And so we're like, oh, Lucy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And Josephine reminds her that while Lucy thinks the Lost Generation can be described as aimless, she says, no, they're just more like battered, but they're about to stand up again. So very much the scripting of where Lucy is at the moment.
Yeah. And I think that's also kind of, actually, for all three of them, you know, since Wyatt was kind of beat down since we haven't found his wife's, killer yet, you know, that he got to stand up, and that was kind of huge for all three of them, I think.
So it was very therapeutic on the part of Josephine Baker to say that at that
point. Well, that's what Alexis was saying earlier of how
she just always knew what to say, apparently. Mm-hmm. So.
So as we give our moment of silence there for Mr. David Baumgartner, one time travel trip.
Bam, bam. No, that's not fair.
I know. And that was even worse is that unfortunately.
He was standing out in the open. I was waiting for him to get shot. I'm like, you're not hiding behind something?
But like I said, I thought he was going to get shot and then get injured and they would have to take him back or something, or maybe you have to be stuck with the lifeboat. But yeah, I didn't think he was going to die.
It might be a good reminder for us, though, in terms of how dangerous these situations are, that we haven't had somebody important die in a while.
I just felt bad because I was like, he finally gets to fight about time travel, but then he dies with it. That sucks. But
I agree. It's a good reminder of how dangerous this is, but it sucks. It's the guest of the week, so to speak, that ends up buying. You're like,
but you got to move that plot along, though.
You got to move it. Sadly, he doesn't even get a chance to get brought back. He is left behind in 1927.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Understandably so, is from Josephine saying that, you know, if you stuck around there, they could bring you in for questioning, which is going to totally derail what you're here to supposed to.
But it would also suck just because, like, what if he has family? Like, they just that's it.
Well, they know he does something military-esque. That's your thing. Every time you go on a mission, you could die.
Well, yeah, and the fact that Agent Christopher has already said that she would say that, you know, they, you know, this person died serving their country. Leave it at that.
That every day. It could be that they're time traveling.
Hey.
That's true.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You never know.
There you go. Maybe we'll see at the end of the episode they find the unmarked grave in Paris where he was buried.
Casket in the chat room says, I so knew he was going to die as soon as I saw his gun. I know, right? He should have brought a real gun from the present day. I thought that too. I'm like, oh.
But I also felt bad because he was just following protocol.
But that's why Wyatt works out so well in terms of, like, you need to know where you can bend the rules a little bit because otherwise you're going to die.
Yeah, no, it's unfortunate that. Yeah. You know, that he's like, I showed up for work today. I'm ready to do time travel. Oh, well, crap.
Yeah.
And I do like how Lucy's so used to Wyatt thinking like that because she knows she can rely on that. So she's like, where's your real gun? No, Wyatt always carries a real gun. Where's yours? No? All right. but we do see that Benjamin Cale finally at least reveals some of his cards to Mason about why he's been so fixated on Lucy and does tell him that he's his daughter. So I guess since Mason has made his choice with Rittenhouse, I guess they're being a little bit more forthcoming with some information to him. I'd be curious to see how much what Mason knows about Rittenhouse's true agenda. The whole big picture.
Yeah, I love how they like drop that. They're like, the true agenda. And I'm like, and that is?
Yes.
I love how we're just
complete
like,
the sentence.
We're
just
gonna change time. Like, no, that was not true agenda.
Yeah.
We're gonna change time.
And
they left the fill in the blank.
We're gonna use a time machine to change time.
I'm so tired of that.
Yeah. so we do see Hemingway, Lucy, and Rufus on the trail for finding out where Flynn and Lindbergh are. And they separate because Hemingway can't hold his liquor for a moment. That was the most polite excuse to puke I've ever seen in my life.
But that makes sense, though, because he's drank so much that he's like, all right, I'm ready to go. You know what? Before we continue, I should probably throw up outside.
Yeah. Someone take me outside, please.
He probably was thinking, he's like, I don't want to throw up in here. One, because there's a lady present. Two, because I don't want them to find my throw up. I don't know.
You gotta be a real alcoholic.
Or in a house is gross, so he might need to go outside.
You gotta be a real alcoholic to be okay with just throwing up and still going on. And still,
I think he was just trying to be classy.
True.
I hate throwing up.
I have.
You've had somebody escort you out to puke.
We were about to go into a nightclub for her birthday, and she's like, "Woo, I'm ready. I need to puke." And we weren't close to a bathroom, so she's like, "Can you just take me? I don't want to throw," because she needs someone to hold her hair. So
and then
like,
she came back and she was fine.
Oh yeah, she went 8 shots after that.
Had someone pull me out. I was like, driving, I'm like, you need to pull over.
Yeah, that makes more sense, too. But, like, no, that was more of, like, she's had too much. Sylvia in the chat says, another Hemingway, since we were talking about Hemingway earlier. Hemingway loved bullfights, too. Ava Gardner, and Rita Haywood would all drink with the fighters after the bullfights. So we're just getting all these facts.
And here's another one. Thank you guys in the chat. You guys are awesome. Justin said, what Baker said about the Lost Generation is an actual quote from Hemingway about the meaning of the term in the book The Sun Also Rises. Nice touch. Timeless writers. Yes, I do. We all agree with how much they're putting in this show, and it's wonderful.
I love it. I love the fact that we're bringing all these facts out. It's awesome.
So Lucy gets abducted while Hemingway and Rufus are out.
Yes. Mind you, I'm tired of this crap.
There you go. brought to Flynn, and they strike a deal where if Lucy can convince Lindbergh not to be a member of Rittenhouse anymore, that mm-hmm. Flynn will let him leave here and go on about his mm-hmm. way.
Yeah.
He's not convinced that Lucy can do it, but it's certainly, that's one reason that he has Lucy doing it. The other one, though, is just to listen in on the whole conversation and find out what he can discern about Rittenhouse through that conversation between the two of them. But it was nice to see that conversation between Lucy and Lindbergh. Mm-hmm. They got a very similar things at that moment there. Lucy's story.
I thought you were going to say Lucy and Flynn, because it really, now you start to see the beginnings of them actually working together.
Not really. I mean, I get what you're trying to say, though, because you can kind of see it, because the fact that she already knew what she was going to say going into it and then working together. But I also feel like Flynn is starting to get a little bit more ruthless with her.
Yeah.
At this point in time, because before he was just like, I'm here to tell you the truth, but now he's just kind of like, you need to do what I'm going to do, or I'm going to kill you, or kill Lindbergh.
But at the same time, the diary thing's coming up, and she's going to write all this stuff out. Oh, is it going to be for
she
him?
She gets the diary.
We'll get there, because we'll I have things. Sorry, just stop hitting the table.
Flynn was ready to team up with Lucy on the episode when they went to go back to get Rittenhouse, but when she just wouldn't let him kill his son, mm-hmm. I feel like that really broke Lindbergh and Flynn. Yeah, it's like, mm-hmm. all right, there's definitely a distinct divide between
and
the two.
And you do have to wonder if Lucy would have died if they killed the son. I know somebody said that to us in the tweet. And it's not necessarily so, because it seems that there's different family lines.
Oh, but, yeah.
Yeah,
totally.
I don't think that's how that would have worked. I think she would have been born. It's just Rittenhouse wouldn't be a thing, supposedly.
Yeah, I mean, because there's many members of Rittenhouse with many different bloodlines.
Right.
So, extinguishing so one, we're extinguish them all.
We're learning.
I want that to be Chris's tagline. We're learning. Mm-hmm. but they have a nice little conversation. And I feel like that Lindbergh, because as Lucy explains to Rufus, Lindenberg's history was that he became a Nazi sympathizer, spewed anti-Semitic hate across the states, got an award from Hitler. And you find out, I guess that's not necessarily how he feels, but that's something that his father wants him to do. So you understand what Rittenhouse
can
do.
Some sort of a diversion.
Mm. Yeah, for something bigger, which I'm assuming is to, I don't know.
Now, historically, is that what Lindbergh really did?
I knew about the fact that he was saying hateful things. I didn't know what those hateful things are.
So you didn't know it was Nazi sympathizers?
I didn't know.
So far, the show has been pretty accurate.
So I'm going to go with
they're just giving you a different context for why he would be doing that.
Yeah.
But, the fact that he could have maybe just, that's just what his family wanted him to do, but not because they were Rittenhouse, just because they were just Nazi sympathizers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's probably where that started from. And they're just like, let's just add that on there for funsies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. But like I said, I really related to this conversation a lot because my mom and her entire family was going into, like, medical, and, like, my brother is going into medical and things like that. And I was like, I'm going to work in film. So,
yay!
You know, my mom was, like, new, and we fought about it, and eventually she got over it and let me do it, clearly, because I'm here. But at the same time, I understood what they were going through, because it's a rough road, and you need to be really passionate about something in order to go get your parents, because that's hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, very true.
So I would always, you know, advise, if you believe in something, go for it, but if you're like, I don't know about it, I would wait.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of hardship and heartbreak that comes into that. So
into taking a different path.
Yeah, and in that, and I agree that that what Lucy said, where like we are the people that you're supposed to pave your way for your future, not for somebody else, and that's definitely something I firmly believe in, and you just gotta just take it by the reins or by the bullhorns, whatever.
You sound just like Josephine Baker.
I'm trying.
The horse by the reins.
Thank you.
Right.
Yes,
there we go. I was mixing them together.
It's all right.
You can see, I'm not an English major.
Yeah, they'll take her to a bullfight. Yeah.
No, I'll just watch from afar. It's fine. I'll just film it.
But Hemingway also gets a nice little, gives a pep talk to Rufus as well when he's feeling that.
Yes, that was a fun pep talk.
That was his just, Rufus feeling so alone in that moment there.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it could have happened though. Like the fact that maybe Lucy got kidnapped and then he never saw her again. Wyatt's in jail somewhere.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't know what to do.
Nope. He's just all by himself with a drunk.
But I mean, he can go to the lifeboat and go back home.
A pep talk from a drunk guy. I mean, is there going to be much value to it?
But it made him understand his own truth that he already was thinking, because it's one of those, you rile someone up, and then they say it, and then they're like, oh, you're right, that's what I was already thinking. You just had to get me to say
it
myself.
A lot of people always say that a person who's drunk, their sober thoughts technically are coming out. So
there's no restraint.
So
no
like
filter.
No filter. So, like, there's, I mean, sometimes it's not true.
So you're getting the truth coming from him, is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, no, the fact that Hemingway is obviously, this is how he is. He knows that if he riles him up to the point where he will admit it, you know, he understands where he's coming from, because he's probably been in that situation before.
Yeah.
So, and also, it makes sense why he drinks so much. much. He's mm-hmm. seen war. He was also an ambulance driver. He's seen quite a bit. He's lost a lot of friends. It makes sense. And the fact that Rufus can technically relate to him also makes sense. He just doesn't take out his anger through liquor. He takes it out through just bottling it up and then letting it out, like what he did tonight.
Yeah, and he's even like, no, I have fought. These are the things I've done. And then he goes, oh, wait.
That was a pretty good scene for him, wasn't it? Where he's like, I did this.
I like that we got vibrato from all three of them. Like, we got to see their demons and everything in this episode, and we were able to fit it all in a 45-minute episode.
Yeah.
It was great, you know?
And we find out through Lucy's talk with Charles that it reveals the name of an automotive dealer, one of the largest automotive persons there in Paris at the time, Mr. Chavert, that he's supposed to contact if he landed safely, and he's going to take care of him from there.
Oh, boy.
So Flynn says, all right, that's somebody I need to be talking to. So what he gets to that conversation, as you were mentioning earlier, Chris, we don't know quite yet, but certainly something good. Gun, yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Is that a real auto brand?
I'm assuming so. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm going to go,
if you guys know, again, put it in the
chat.
But
it's a French one, so it might be a car we don't really have here.
Right.
Yeah, or maybe it died,
it out. Had a thing then. It was maybe the most popular and then just didn't move on.
I don't know why I thought, I was thinking of, like, Chevrolet was what I was thinking of, because it's the same spelling, but I don't think that's correct.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But I love that when the thing that was irking me, which these guys can witness, because I was sitting there just, like, flapping my hands over.
You looked like a band director.
Well, because I was upset, because when he was talking about the catacombs underneath, and then they went into their deep talk, I was like, wait, are we not going to talk about the catacombs? They're clearly in the catacombs if they're underneath the building. But we never talked about it, so I was sitting there going...
He just takes a minute to go, wait, did you say the catacombs? Because, I mean, it's one of those, like, how much somebody listens to someone in a conversation. Because in the chat, Redneck and Nerd said, I love how Hemingway never questioned Rufus going on about fighting the Germans, the Brits, the Apache.
So it's, no, correct.
He doesn't say anything. He just lets him go with it. Also, and then Hemingway Rufus, too, goes, wait, you said catacombs. Here, wait,
I also think that because technically Rufus is sober or kind of sober at this point in time, so I'm assuming that Hemingway
I'm thinking Hemingway is a little too drunk to be like, whatever, cool dude.
Yeah, I'm glad I ended in all these battles, even though I've never heard of any of these. I didn't know you fight the Indians.
I have too.
Yeah.
And he's chasing the green fairy. That's the absence.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that was very interesting.
So Rufus and Hemingway make it down to the catacombs. They get the drop on the guard, our smoking henchmen there, take away Lindbergh and Lucy. But Emma stops in the way for a second, and as Rufus says, you're either coming with us or you're getting out of the way. Mm. And but I do like that there was no forcing, and Emma isn't into doing any kind of violence as well. She just kind of stepped aside.
I feel like, I mean, I want to know what you guys think as well, because I feel like Emma's not really here to hurt people. She just kind of wants to... She knows that Rufus doesn't want Rittenhouse to win just as much as they do, so Flynn is just a little bit more aggressive.
Flamboyant.
I mean, the thing is, has she really been able to witness how murderous Flynn can be?
They killed Anthony last episode.
Yeah, but Rufus, I mean, that's like... not better or worse that he knew that person, but the way how Flynn murders people randomly in history, like, just bystanders, because that's the part that seems to bother our team so much, too. Like, their thing of Rufus getting Lucy to go back, he's like, no, Flynn kills people. We have to go stop him. So it's not necessarily, like, Flynn himself is so dangerous to anybody he encounters, and I don't think Emma's witnessed that just yet.
Yeah, because I feel like with Anthony, she was kind of on Flynn's side because Anthony was trying to stop them, even though she didn't probably understand that Anthony was technically trying to stop Rittenhouse together, but in his own way. So she kind of was like, well, I guess technically he is a loose end. We have to get rid of him.
Yeah,
it's true. She doesn't know that, like, because she's traveling with a mass murderer.
Yeah, has no idea.
Serial killer type.
So I think that's the main reason. But I think if she knew that Flynn was killing just random people in history, I think she would have left by now.
Yeah.
Me personally.
Very true.
Yeah.
But we also see Agent Chris. So she steps out of the way. They're able to leave. Agent Christopher goes to visit Wyatt. They kind of figure out what the deal is. She leaves him a paperclip for him to bust his way out.
Again, I was like, so does everybody, just every special agent just knows how to get out of handcuffs through paperclips? I need to learn how to do that. I would like to know.
And our team makes it back to the present.
Or hair clips, bobby pins.
Yeah, bobby pins. And I'm just like, I don't get it.
To find out the new status quo there over at Mason Industries, that now that Rittenhouse is running the show very openly now.
Yes.
So they, although they are supposed to act like they kind of really don't know that. And Lucy does find out, though, that, you know, nothing changed with Lindbergh. He disappeared for a few weeks. but ultimately came forward and claimed credit and went on to the life that we know.
I just think that even though Josephine Baker tried to help him, I think there was some way, shape, and form that, just like any kid, it's hard to see your mom get mad or be disappointed or something like that, so he probably couldn't handle maybe his family being disappointed, or maybe they forced him. I have no idea.
But to think that a singular conversation is going to change everything.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's hard to talk to someone who you either just met or just can kind of relate to you than your parents. It's tough. So I feel like that was just something that he just decided to do.
Yeah. Or I agree with you. They could have forced him down.
Yeah, and forced him to do it. But I also it also shows that, like, again, we always talk about that time. Sometimes if your day is that day, it's going to happen eventually. So it's that weird spectrum of, like, okay, time can change drastically or it's going to happen eventually and you're just going to just have to deal with it. So I like that this show is able to do that.
Kind of goes either way.
Because White has that nice moment with Agent Christopher, would say either Flynn lied to me about who killed my wife or fate just decided that my wife is going to be dead. So what do you do with that? But the team is reunited, and Lucy does get a gift from her mother, because in our family, what we do when we have trouble, we write things down.
No, as soon as she said that, you guys all saw me. They're like, why is Alexa jumping around? I was like, that jarred out.
There you go.
No, freaking out.
Too. I'm like, write it down. I'm like, see it, and you're just like.
Because I saw, Karen just looked at me, she's like, I'm going to hate this next part. And I was like, it's a jarred out.
But you know what, though, too, like, if she knows it's what it's going to be, how much would you alter what you write? Like, some people in the chat room are saying, like, well, if you wrote false information or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, knowing what she does know, could she rewrite it and help, like, maybe steer it a different way?
Or maybe technically all together, maybe if we have that kind of, like, time loop kind of theory, that maybe she did write all these things because she knew that she was going to eventually meet up with them. That's my prediction, is that she planned all these meetings.
Like, that's what Flynn kind of tells her in the beginning. Like, you did write this, so.
Yeah.
It's one of those, she doesn't know it yet that was her plan, but it is.
This is where I said that it looked like the beginnings of her working with Flynn, because ultimately it appears that that's what happened from the journal that we've been reading. And so she's coming to a point now where kind of the places are being laid out. Rittenhouse is over here at the Mason Industries. They've got, you know, the other side. And she's realizing that, you know, even though she doesn't like Flynn, he may be one method to taking Rittenhouse out.
It makes sense. And that's why I think it's more like leaving breadcrumbs for your older self, is what I'm thinking. So it's like a Hansel Gretel kind of situation that she's trying to do. And that's where that time loop kind of continues through.
Yeah, very much so, where if Lucy takes a page, and the rest of the team takes a page from Flynn, where they play the long game. Everything that we've seen so far in the journal is accurate because that's experiences that they've had. But now going forward, anything she writes new in the journal since that point could be stuff planting seeds for Flynn to screw up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can get the upper hand, maybe.
Yeah.
Be interesting. But that's what we've got. We've got two episodes left to figure out what this fine team is going to do to try to stop Rittenhouse.
Snaps.
And or Flynn. We'll see what the deal is. So why don't we do a quick prediction before we wrap up this episode?
Ooh, let's see. Next week looks like...
I was going to say, the other little thing that people are very excited about is the Lucy and Wyatt hug.
Oh, yes, I forgot. Yeah, I was like...
People were like, oh my gosh, the hug and the feels. I mean, it is, but it's that awkward moment where he's like, okay, well, my wife, and so it's like,
that's just, you know.
Yeah, it's rough. I mean, it was nice to see them back together.
Because she's like, I'm so happy to see you. Oh, yeah, your wife thing. Like, rein in those feelings.
Yeah. It's one of those, I feel like it's going to be one of those shows where it's like, with Ross and Rachel, it's like, oh, we're going to tease it for a little bit, and then maybe they'll get together, or maybe they won't. I don't know.
But, you know, this is a show to me that doesn't need that, though. I mean,
it doesn't need it.
So for
but
me,
I
don't get invested in the ship part of it, because I just enjoy the series as general. Yeah. I don't need that ship part.
But I'm with you.
Too, okay, for all you people rooting for them, I mean, I understand.
Totally get it.
Do you really want to be that person who hooks up with someone after their spouse has died, and they're still kind of mourning them, and they're like still thinking about them? It's like, you need to give them some time, because essentially Lucy's almost just rebound at this point in a way.
Yeah.
He's still so constant. He's still focused on his wife. Like, it's being like, nah.
I mean, yeah, I
he's constantly
that.
Talking about her. So it's just like,
I don't think it adds to the story that much. I'm with you. Like, it's like,
I like the idea of them together. I just think he needs time to get over his wife and come to terms with that. And even the fact that he still thinks, I need to help you guys, but I could save her later.
Well,
Lucy can't go into that relationship knowing, like, Yeah, so you still think about your dead wife.
Well, no, so I think that if we are going to get that relationship at all, I think that if they destroy the time machine, like, completely, like, there's no way to go back, then he can learn to grow from there, and I'd be okay with it. I just want that Josephine Baker Lucy ship. That's what I want. Mm-hmm. I want them to get together. That sounds great. She can just go back in time and just be with Josephine Baker. It'd be great.
There you go.
Are we still on predictions?
Oh, yeah. Now we can do predictions. Sorry, I just wanted to talk about the relationship thing, because I know you guys in the chat were talking about
You guys already know my prediction. I'm hoping that she uses the journal for like I said, that breadcrumbs kind of time loop where she's trying to prep for older Lucy or whatever. Or she might do what she does, where what you guys said, where she's just going to start writing in it, and hopefully it'll change the journal in this point in time and get false information. That's what I'm hoping for.
Or, at least it will help her situation more, you know. I think that's a good prediction.
Yeah, especially since I don't really know how they're going to bring Wyatt on these missions also. I don't know if they're going to,
I don't know how they're secretly going to get him. Yeah.
I think they have to become very... they have to pirate their own ship at this point.
Well, I mean, they did say in the preview that they were going to steal it, so obviously it's going to happen. I just think it's funny how many times the mothership or the lifeboat has been stolen at this point in time.
And once the ship's going, it's not like anybody can stop it. I like how the security runs up, and they're like, when Rufus and Wyatt go, and it's like... What are you going to do?
Right. Here, grab it.
They're going to jump into it and shoot it.
It's too valuable. They can't destroy it.
Can you imagine if they did? That would be insane.
They're like
and that's the end of the season. They're dead.
Yeah.
It will be interesting because the journal, I think, is a good plan of attack for them, but they also have been such a reactionary team.
Yes.
So they've been responding to wherever Flynn's going. So to be able to write further in the journal, to kind of lay false ideas for Flynn, you've got to start doing some investigation, not Flynn-related, to be able to find out some information that you can change and alter and put in there as well.
Yeah, and I know that... I would think some people would be like, oh, you know, just don't do anything with the journal at all. The fact that it already has stuff in it means that at some point in time she's going to write in it. So it would, I don't know if it would completely change time if she just decided not to write in it, but it also doesn't really affect time because it already has stuff in it.
And
technically.
And they've already kind of dealt with that stuff. So it's like, what's the point? Like, is the journal really going to be relevant as they move forward, or it just kind of gets polished off there?
Yeah, see, I don't know if that was just that's why I said it can either go either way. We either use it a lot and try to change everything, or they're just like, look at the journal. And then we just never talk about it again.
Right.
So either way, it depends on what the writers choose at this point in time.
Yes.
If they're like, we're just here to show you this to be like, ooh, or like, oh, yeah, we're going to use this tool quite a bit.
Because now, if Rittenhouse has their plan that they want to reshape history in the face of Rittenhouse and make it even more prominent and stuff, if we're granted a next season... Then are we say? Then maybe they got to go back and chase Rittenhouse, that's now attempting to build their prominence rather than Flynn, who was trying to kill them.
No, I think my big prediction is that Rittenhouse is successful. They do not get out of that, and then at least half of the next season for season two, hopefully, crossing our fingers, that they're actually trying to actively fix time at this point, you know, at this point.
Not from Flynn, but from Rittenhouse.
From Rittenhouse directly. Yeah. And that I think that either Flynn dies or he disappears in general.
I can see a flip where they, Rittenhouse still stays control where they are right now, and they've got the lifeboat, but then the team gets hold of Flynn's mothership. And now they have that ship.
Well, yeah, that's why I think that Flynn's going to disappear or die, is that they're going to, instead of, the lifeboat's going to either explode or something's going to happen to it, but they have the mothership now.
Maybe.
So, and then they have to deal with that.
There you go.
You know what would be interesting, though, is to see a Rittenhouse future where Rittenhouse is really more prominent.
Well, that's why I think it would be, not smart to say that the writers are not smart, but I think it would be efficient for them to have Rittenhouse win at the end of the season, so that we can see what a Rittenhouse future
society
looks like.
And
seeing how Rufus, Lucy, and Wyatt, even Agent Christopher at this point, how they fit.
Right, it's kind of like Back to the Future, but let's do
that.
Next
at that point, I would want to see if let's say Rittenhouse did succeed and maybe Jessica didn't die, then what? Because maybe she was a part of it, or maybe that's just how the future was. Everybody's just there, and you have to deal with this. Maybe Jessica's like, I totally agree with our new leaders. I think it's great. And then Wyatt's like, oh my God, what are we going to do now? Like, it'd be insane. I think it's a good one to start with.
It'll be challenging because at least the rule, and according to Malcolm's tweet that he sent out there, is one of the three rules, that you can't go back to a time you've already been.
Yep.
So that's going to make it tough for them to, if Rittenhouse does take control, how do you fix something, because you can't go back to a timeline that you've
now,
already been.
Now, is it specifically a timeline or a time, like, could you go the next month or something like that? Because then you're not there. I understand, like, if...
No, I think it has to be a time that you visited already. You can't see yourself, I think.
Okay, so, like,
is.
If you went on Monday, could you go on Saturday again the second time or
as
something?
Long as there was maybe. A
and then there's not a crossover.
Maybe. Yeah, I would assume so. I mean, I think the one thing that they were trying to avoid is trying to stay out of future stuff because technically you're already there. So.
Well, future, you don't know where you'll be,
I mean,
too.
Not future, you know, present, I'm sorry. Yes. Present stuff. So, like, that's why you're not... We're not seeing most of, like, the... Not the 90s, but, like, the 2010s.
Sure.
And
stuff.
Yeah, and stuff like that, because the fact that these people would be alive.
Yeah.
And adult enough to be like, okay, wait a minute. Yeah. You know, I mean, maybe if they went when they were kids, it wouldn't be as much of a problem.
So if we go to the future, we're likely going to go beyond their lifetimes.
Maybe. You never know. Maybe it will, I guess, I think that the mothership will break maybe at one point or in the next two episodes, and then they're stuck in the future, and then they have to figure out why it became this way.
Sorry. Oh, that could be really interesting.
Yeah, all right. I'm jumping into all these places.
Look at that. Yay. So many theories, and we'd love to hear more of yours as well. So, folks, why don't you share those theories with us on various forms of social media. You can like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Everybody, thanks so much for hopping in the chat and sharing your thoughts about the show. And if you want to share more of your theories, you can reach out to us on Twitter. Chris, where can they find you?
Chris Howard at Chris Howard Live, Twitter and Instagram.
And you guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Carrie Dealing, KARIDLANE.
And you can find me all over social media at atores890. That's ATORES890.
You can follow me on Twitter at Happy Go Jackie, and I'm getting my Gram game going. So why not follow me on Happy Go Jackie there too? Sure.
You're gonna hate all that food that's coming through.
That's so gross. That's all I'm doing.
No,
right
it's
now.
Amazing, and I hate it.
All right, folks, we'll see you back here. Only 2 episodes left for the Thomas After Show.
So,
bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Maybe that's why
the views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.